Welcome back to Vocal Point. This is Jerry Newcomb, and right now we're going to talk with Ann Polk. Now, recently, President Obama has spoken out to condemn and to push for the banning of therapy to help teenagers who don't want to have same-sex attractions. In other words, it's sort of buying into the philosophy of once gay, always gay, you're born that way, and conversion, so-called therapy, only muddles the water or muddies the water and makes things worse, according to Obama and the media and the elites that control so much of our culture. We're going to talk about this right now with Ann Polk, who is the president of RestoredHopeNetwork.com or .org, both. She's a former lesbian, and she doesn't agree with Obama's latest push. We welcome Ann back to Vocal Point. Ann, welcome back, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jerry. Thanks for having me.
Now, it's a free country, but it is increasingly becoming a politically correct country where your views are basically allowed as long as they comport with the current liberal mores. And lately, it's chic to be gay, it seems. But the sad part is that, in a sense, a teen is stuck this way and is condemned to be that way, even if he or she doesn't want to be that way.
That's right, actually. It's almost becoming criminal. You could lose your license if these state bans pass. If a child comes to you and says they want to resolve same-sex attraction, and you say, oh, okay, well, we can work towards your goal. Let's talk about what might be underlying, what's going on in your life, et cetera. You know, talk therapy, standard care. Well, guess what? If you answer that affirmatively, that, hey, let's talk it through and see where this goes, guess what? You could lose your license according to state law in certain places, or at least they're attempting to pass that. California and California and New Jersey, beg your pardon, have both passed bans for care for teens with unwanted same-sex attraction under 18. So regardless of what family wants or what they want, that's questionable, and certainly there are consequences for that for Christians in the counseling field. And that's what President Obama spoke into recently. It wasn't a matter of what the therapy actually is. It's a matter of this goal is unacceptable to the elites of this country. And, you know, so that makes biblical Christian sexual ethics no longer palatable to this nation, and in fact enforced by law, that you must embrace homosexual behavior, identity, and feelings, or whoever's helping you can lose their license. That's so overreaching, it's unconscionable.
It is. It would even seem to be unconstitutional to me, but Veritas Communications, who represents you as far as, you know, getting the word out about what you're doing in your organization, they wrote this. His administration, speaking of Obama, of course, his administration went on record recently to ensure that all gay people in the USA have no clinical option but to embrace their homosexuality. Now, let me ask you a question. You describe yourself as an ex-lesbian or former lesbian. How long were you in the lifestyle? Did you ever think you were born that way? Did you ever want to change? And did you seek any kind of counseling or help? Explain about your own situation.
Yeah, you bet. When I was preteen, I had same-sex attraction. Some of that I pursued, some of it I didn't want. Honestly, I was indeed confused. Who am I? What am I doing? What is my future? What does it hold? And when you're a teenager, particularly a junior higher, I mean, everything is just so vulnerable, and it's a pretty tumultuous time in any child's life. So they go into high school, then they reach adulthood. And during those times for me, I tried to, you know, fix myself, and that didn't work. I dated guys and all that. I still had the feelings there, and then decided to pursue those feelings. Meanwhile, God pursued me and redeemed me for the purposes of living my life for Christ, which did not include homosexuality. And at that point, I went through this tension of, I want to please God with my life, but, oh, there are these feelings that don't please him. There are these things that I need to surrender. And at that point, I found great Christian counseling, one of which helped me begin to deal with the fact that I'd been molested when I was younger. Mm. And that was very helpful. That didn't resolve all of the issues in my life. It was a period of time, about a year, that was introductory, at least, to even know that Jesus cared about things like that. And then later on in my life, I had another counselor who was, again, helpful. And then the most helpful thing for me, though, was other people who are leaving homosexuality also, who, as I witnessed their lives and all different reasons why they arrived there and what they were going through and their stages they were at, I saw the living witness of transformation. And it was through Christian discipleship, really, of people surrendering these parts of their lives and what God was doing in their life to transform them more into his image. And indeed, to leave behind homosexuality. So what I witnessed in front of me, I saw and I had hope for, and I continued on and gained myself. And, you know, to shut down that option for kids to even look at their lives and evaluate them, I think it's absolutely un-American, number one. Secondly, they're allowing for the mischaracterization of counseling care from Christian counselors all across the U.S., and the end goal has very much to do with shutting down the helping professions for those who believe in God's sexual ethic. And so our very design speaks against the very goal that they have in mind to shut that down. I do remember thinking I was born gay, but it's clear that I wasn't, because I'm not gay anymore.
Now, you mentioned molestations, and I know we've discussed this in previous times, but I think it's appropriate to bring out here, how common is that in the background of a person who goes on to become a homosexual or a lesbian?
Well, it's not every single circumstance, but it is very common. The women I surveyed in 2000, there were 265 women that I surveyed. Over 6 out of 10, almost 7 out of 10, were sexually violated, and that in childhood. So almost 7 out of 10 individuals. That's a lot.
That is a lot. Now, is that a scientific survey, or was that more like 260 people that you were dealing with that were, you know, that had a lesbian or homosexual background?
That was 265 women who were in the process, in some degree, in the process of leaving homosexuality through our ministries.
Okay. So
it was not professionally done, but it was done by, it was literally created by, I had a team reviewing it for bias. I had another team that helped design the processing of the data. So it was professionally done in that sense, but not peer-reviewed professionally with a psychological magazine.
I mean, somebody could argue from the other side and say, look, there's one factor that all 265 of those people had in common, apart from their lesbian background, and that is that they all wanted to change. So, therefore, of, you know, 265 lesbians, whether they wanted to change or didn't want to change, you know, how many of them were molested. In any event, it does indicate something, at least anecdotally, And I think that's significant. Now, am I to understand?
Right. Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I think that if we look at large surveys that are cross-national, we'll find some interesting data. Like in Korea, there was a study that found that the parents of gay men who were all men have to serve in the military, and so they do a psychological evaluation for all. And they came up with a really high survey.
Okay, I'm assuming this is all South Korea, right?
It is South Korea.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah,
South Korea.
Sure.
South Korea, and they came to the conclusion that predominantly the men who had high incidences of homosexual desire and depression, by the way, which accompanied it, they found that the parents of those individuals were highly involved, but not highly nurturing. So there are some other interesting facts that you can find along the way, and that is a huge sample. It involves all of the youth and of a certain age throughout the entire nation.
Did that study? Yeah,
really important things to find out.
Yeah, absolutely. Did that study? I'm just curious. Did it happen to mention the molestation factor or as a potential factor?
You know, I don't remember on that particular study.
Okay, but it's an important point. All right. So going back to your own personal story, it would seem to me that since you mentioned two counselors in particular were extremely helpful to you. Would we get to the point, possibly in America, if Obama and his type had, and what I mean by that, his type, I mean those that have bought to this whole liberal agenda to the nth degree, would we possibly get to the point, if they had their druthers, that such counselors wouldn't even be allowed to counsel?
Right, and apparently that is the end goal.
Wow.
The sponsors of the bill in Oregon are the gay lobbying group called Basic Rights Oregon. They essentially believe that people are, you know, born gay. They can't change. It's immutable and it's hardwired. And that's apparently where the APA task force on gay and lesbian issues also was handpicked to represent as well. So we have a group of elites, and those who are open to the persuasion of the gay lobby to back up those things through prohibiting care for anyone who wants to surrender their lives to Christ or surrender their sexuality or has different sexual ethics than the gay lobby has. Honestly, it's do it our way or too bad, you lose your license, is basically what the gay lobby has in mind.
Now, is your ex-husband who was famous for coming out of the closet as an ex-gay and then unfortunately embraced the lifestyle later and now says it's all hooey, was he part of that same group that's pushing for this kind of ban?
Well, yes indeed, Jerry. He has submitted testimony in favor of the ban
The
state of Oregon. He submitted a paper. Anyone can read it or download it. It's on there. State of Oregon website.
You know, this really tragic. There's a statement from Jesus Christ that I never seem to forget about. And it's when he was blasting the Pharisees in Matthew 23. But one of the statements he says in, you know, woe, woe, woe. He says, woe to you scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You shut the kingdom of heaven in men's faces. You yourselves won't go in, but you prevent others from going in. And not naming anybody by name, but specifically that idea of people shutting the kingdom of heaven in other people's faces. Okay, you don't want to go, you know, fine. I mean, that's your choice, and ultimately God will, you know, honor that, and you will not be happy with your choice in eternity, let's face it. But in the meantime, for the sake of other people, you know, let them go to heaven if they want to. You know, it's disturbing.
Right. It's tremendously disturbing. And just on the basis of freedom of choice, here we have pro-gay forces wanting to eliminate the option for anyone to pursue anything but affirming homosexuality. I mean, they're eliminating a freedom. They're seeking to eliminate a freedom, I'll put it that way. And the president is in league with them, which is absolutely unconscionable. That word comes to mind over and over again. It is beyond belief that he would put his weight, the weight of his office, behind this, except that he probably owes political favors, and maybe this was his view all along, that people should not be allowed to change, I guess.
We're talking right now with Ann Polk, and she is one who affirms that she personally has changed. Her last name, by the way, is spelled P-A-U-L-K. She is the director of the Restored Hope Network, available at www.restoredhopenetwork.com, a coalition of Christian ministries that offer hope for those hurting from sexual or relational brokenness, especially those impacted by homosexuality. And Anne says recently, and you can comment on this if you would, there's a growing intolerance of Christian sexual ethics. This may soon lead to a moratorium on giving therapeutic licenses to people with a biblical worldview. It's hard to believe that in America it could ever get that bad, but we are sort of moving in that direction, aren't we?
We really are. There's a bit of a, not roller coaster, it's a steam train. It's a powered train that's coming down the tracks very fast, and under the guise of this or that or the other is seeking to prohibit freedoms. And one of which, we've already seen those things happen to florists and photographers and cake bakers across the nation. This is actually extending those sorts of behaviors and dangers to Christians in the counseling profession. So here we have a new profession targeted. And honestly, I say this is the time to stand. Let's just stop this train in its tracks.
Well, we have the
freedom. The further we let it go down the line, the more it's going to gain steam and the more difficult, again, it will be to stop.
Now, you're quoted as saying recently, by withholding therapy to those in confusion, we provoke suicidal ideation. That's your quote. I want you to comment on that, and I want you to address those who might say, oh, yeah, great, Anne. The reason these young people want to commit suicide is because of people like you or on the right that basically say homosexuality is wrong.
I have heard personally from a number of people just recently that they have felt suicidal and without hope. We had a young lady at our conference last summer who was told over and over again, no, sorry, you need to embrace your homosexuality. And her response to that was, if there is no hope, then I'm going to take my life. And she came to our conference, and we did not know this. We didn't know who she was. We didn't know she struggled, no nothing. She told God, if you don't give me some hope, I'm going to kill myself. And she had a plan and everything. She came to our conference without us knowing who she was. God began ministering to her during the worship time. And at the end of the two-day conference, she told us what she'd come there saying to God. And her response at the end of that, and this is not uncommon, the response at the end is said, I have hope now to align my life with my beliefs. Regardless of what everybody else says, I have hope, and I will live out the rest of my life walking with the Lord. That's what we do, what we do for. And you know what? If someone else chooses to embrace homosexuality, there's plenty of support for that. You know?
Yeah.
All you have to do is embrace it. Own your own feelings. But for those who don't want to embrace their homosexual feelings, that don't want to pursue that life, don't they dare shut the door on these individuals, because they will provoke suicidal ideation.
Okay.
Absolutely.
What would you say to the other side who would say, okay, Anne, but the reason that they would even consider killing themselves is because you're saying that homosexuality is bad. It's wrong. God doesn't approve
of
it.
We did not know who this girl was. I don't know the girl in Florida recently that called me. She has other issues in her life, but she was saying that her psychologist said, nope, you have to embrace homosexuality. It's never going to change, never whatever. Her world, her hope, her desire was to address issues, hers. And I think the thing about it is we have to grow up. We have to take ownership of our own feelings. We have to take ownership of our own goals. We've got to take responsibility for ourselves. If we choose to not pursue change, it is absolutely in our own right to do that. If we choose to align our lives with God's word, then what they're really doing in that case is they're saying that's what provokes this sort of thing. They're not accusing us. They're accusing God. Because God calls homosexuality sin. Therefore, God is evil. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Nope, that's not the case. He is exceptionally good. In fact, everything he's ever done aligns with the natural testimonies of even our biology and our physiology. The very act of gay male sex creates a damage to the physical body, and that alone testifies yeah. to the fact that we weren't designed for this.
Yeah.
If you take only natural, objective view of the whole thing. But this is not an objective view. The gay community does not have an object. They have a very subjective view that they're victims and that it's some horrible thing. Yes, they do have to cope with if their goal and their belief had been Christian-based and out of the scripture, and now they reject that. Of course they're going to have to deal with the difference of view now. They've gone from one view to another. That would happen either way.
And I remember, too, David Kyle Foster, a former homosexual who he's now made a film, And Such Were Some of You, which is very well done, dealing with this whole issue. But one of the things he said in an interview we did many, many years ago for Coral Ridge Ministries, now called D. James Kennedy Ministries, he said, it's interesting to note that the other side will say, well, you know, there's suicides sometimes, and that's your guys' fault because you don't accept us as we are, and so forth. And he said, look, the rates of suicide and suicidal ideation are actually increasing, but that's at the same time as society's acceptance of homosexuality is increasing. He said that in the late 90s. And boy, you look at the rate of acceptance of society today, it's even higher. It's just unbelievable, and yet you still have the same problem. So I think it's a very, very important point that people need to realize that there is hope after all. Tell us another story or two. I mean, that was a very interesting one you told about the lady unknown to you who came to your conference. Give us another example of a life changed through Christ in this particular issue.
Well, I just spoke with another young man who in his teens felt, he's now in his 30s, he felt that he had no option. He didn't know what his options were. He had these feelings he didn't know what to do with. And he went to therapy, and he spoke with a counselor who opened his eyes to his options. And based upon that, he had been suicidal beforehand, and then became, oh, you mean I get to control and decide what to do with this? And at that point, he now walks with the Lord. He surrendered his life to Christ, and he walks out, haltingly or otherwise, his obedience to Christ. And honestly, his life was changed for the better because of the very options that they're trying to prohibit. So that's another case of the very same thing.
Yeah.
I got a call last week from a woman in Florida who said she was suicidal because of her psychiatrist, as I mentioned. And there are a whole bunch of others like that. Let's see. My brain just blanked. So, Jerry, we might have to go with other.
I'll tell you what. Let me ask you this. In your own personal life, Ann Paulk, P-A-U-L-K, how did you change over personally? What was the breakthrough? I know you mentioned there were two Christian counselors that were particularly helpful, but what was the aha moment, if you will? What was the turning point, apart from just seeing them? And by the way, not all counseling is successful, even if the counselor is well-meaning right. and so forth, but go ahead.
Right. Absolutely. What was really helpful was being part of an Exodus type ministry, Restored Hope type ministry in Northern California, and being around other women and men who were leaving the gay life and going through their different experiences. One of the things that God asked of me that was very, very important was to let go of my own self-defense. Like I didn't realize that I walked around all the time afraid that I would be attacked. There was this unconscious thinking in my mind that had come from early childhood. And I regarded men as unsafe and things like that. Well, wouldn't you know, one day the Lord said to me quietly, as I was reading the Psalms about David running into the high tower, he said, I want to be your high tower. Stop protecting yourself at all cases instead of walking around like that. And I remember thinking, you're kidding me. No. And
in a sense, what you did was you built a wall around your heart, and in particular towards men.
Absolutely. And that wall in particular showed up in odd ways, like going jogging, being afraid of who, somebody might jump from behind a bush when there was nobody behind a bush, and I hadn't had anybody behind a bush. So anyway, those kinds of fears had gripped me over a long period of time, and they indeed closed the door to understanding men. Another experience was when I was going across the campus during a conference for our former network, and a man was walking behind me. It was just turning dusk on the college campus, and fear gripped my heart, feeling like I'd be attacked because I'd been molested earlier on in my life.
Mm.
And I looked back and I noticed it was a man's figure. And so instead of running, which was my normal flight or fright situation, I decided to stop and let him pass me and then walk behind him so I wouldn't have to be in fear the whole time. Well, when that happened, it happened to be another leader who was quite safe. And that individual was a man. And he said to me, "Oh, Ann, wonderful to see you." And he took me into the worship time with them. And we all sat together. And it was me surrounded by a bunch of men. I felt so protected. That was a really new experience for me. I felt instead of in danger, I felt protected. And, you know, I have three sons. They're in their teens now. Men are designed to, like in the armed forces, they want to go protect and serve. That's kind of a part of their design, part of their nature. And corrupted, the teen that attacked me when I was four, that took advantage of my vulnerability,
yeah,
that is an aberration of God's design.
Yeah.
So sin is actually a corruption of the nature of man, but I'd come to believe that that was the typical nature. So here God was showing me the beauty of his design and his character and his love for men.
Yeah.
And they're designed to protect me as a woman. Wow. That was a new concept.
That is interesting. I remember reading one time a story of a brief article, actually, about a very prominent lesbian. But it described one man in her life after another who should have been, as you say, protective, but instead they were trying to take advantage of her, chasing her around the house or whatever, you know, to molest her or whatever. And it's like, oh, no wonder this lady hates men. I mean, the poor lady's been, right, you know, had all these terrible experiences at the hands of men.
Sure.
And you're absolutely right. It's a total perversion. But what's so sad is taking the results of the perversion and then essentially forcing the law to protect, quote unquote, to keep children who are struggling with this kind of thing and this confusion, to keep them from even hearing the other side. It's as if the other side doesn't exist, or it's not legitimate, and so we will not allow the children to be exposed to this, but we will allow them to be exposed to what the Bible would call perversion.
That's right. Jerry, I've had my whole life for 25 years questioned in secular news, as if I don't exist, as if my life never occurred. And that's kind of a hard thing to wade through. But the honest truth is I know my God, I know who I am, and so I'm not afraid of all that. And then, you know, at other times they give me an odd compliment of, oh, you could have never been gay. Oh, well, thank you. But you know what? I was gay,
mm-hmm,
and I changed. And that alone, that change aspect is so threatening to those who are in the elite liberal mindset of gay is hardwired, it can never change, you can never be anything different. And it's just part of the MO. It's part of holding people in that construct. And there's so much effort expended on preventing others from seeing that it's not necessarily hardwired, that people can indeed change, and they really have, and there are real people who have experienced this. They're not making this up. They really experienced change of heart, mind. Another thing, when I was in my 20s, and I had just started going to this the Christian ministry, there was a time when I used to, if I admired a woman, I sexualized her. In other words, I thought, oh, if I could be that relationship, that intimate relationship with her, then I would gain what she had. And there was one time I admired a young lady who was very gifted.
We have about 15 seconds to wrap up. 15 seconds. Go ahead. 10 seconds, actually. Go
ahead.
The
interesting thing was, instead of trying to grasp what she had, I recognized that I wanted to glean from her. I wanted to learn from her. And that desexualized.
Another breakthrough.
Another breakthrough.
RestoredHopeNetwork.com. Thank you so much. God bless.